if we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers, bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420. The Answer.
Yes, indeed, it is the Authority. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock on this Thursday, the 15th morning of the fourth month of the year of our Lord 2021. Do not panic. Your taxes are not due today. They gave you another month. Actually, the official deadline to file your taxes for the 2020 tax year is May 17th for almost everybody. May 17th, recognizing that people are still struggling from terrible decisions made from the federal and state governments all over the country in response to COVID-19, knowing people are still suffering, you have a full month more before you have to pay your taxes. So that's how we begin on this Thursday. It's a guest-free edition of the Authority today. By design, we've got a lot of things that we need to talk about together and a lot of audio clips that we're going to listen to and we're going to react to as we get started this morning. But before we do anything, as we do each and every day, this is, I've come to find out by talking to people in person, this is a very important part of our show since we started doing this a couple of months ago. Let's pause and begin our program today, if you would put your hand on your heart, with our Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And I do apologize to those who wish to kneel for the pledge and they're in their car right now and you're unable to do so. Sorry about that. You'll just have to remain seated and angry. We're going to dive right into this. This is a full-on hostile takeover. All right? And this isn't just for a while. What the Democrats are doing right now is an attempt to make sure the pendulum never swings in the other direction again. You know what I'm talking about, right? The political pendulum often swings in both directions, you know, in alternating periods of time. When, for example, there were 12 years of conservative Republican rule, for 8 years President Reagan, for 4 years George H.W. Bush, which would have been 8 years as well if Ross Perot had not gotten into the mix in 1992. But after 12 years of conservative Republican rule and extraordinary growth and extraordinary strength, winning the Cold War, lowering taxes, lowering inflation that was just out of control during the Carter years, after that 12 years of conservative growth, liberal activism held sway. There were 8 years of Bill Clinton, again, fostered and ushered in by Ross Perot's extraordinarily short-sighted idea of trying to upset the system and costing George H.W. Bush millions of votes. But Bill Clinton came in, and we had 8 years of somewhat continued prosperity in terms of the economy, thanks to a Newt Gingrich-led House of Representatives that would not let the president run roughshod over everything. But there was some bipartisanship there. But by and large, as we know, Bill Clinton was, you know, a disaster. The economy notwithstanding, Bill Clinton put us on very dangerous footing in terms of our security around the world, our support of our allies, having the respect of our enemies. He just completely destroyed the United States military, deconstructed it. And after 8 years of that, the American people had had enough, and in came the 8 years of George W. Bush, and the George W. Bush, and the pendulum swung the other direction. Much to the dismay of the far left and the media, and I repeat myself to borrow Pete Kersenow's phrasing, but the far left and the far left media did a hit job on George Bush that nobody had ever seen before. Not Reagan, not H.W. Bush, and certainly not the Democrat presidents. No one had ever been attacked and assaulted and accused of so many different things the way George W. Bush did. And yet, you know, by and large, some good conservative work was done before the pendulum swung in the other direction again. And we had 8 years of the Obama-Biden administration, which set this country on a course for disaster that we have not yet left. And if the current Democrat leadership has its way, we will never leave that course. President Trump interrupted the flow of Obama-Biden leftward transformational governance, because remember, that was their stated goal, to fundamentally transform the United States of America. Transform it from what? From a liberty-loving capitalist republic into a Marxist socialist state. There was one slight interruption there in the 4 years of Donald Trump. The pendulum swung hard to the right during those years. And then, of course, we saw what happened. They, meaning the far left and the media, did things to Donald Trump that made their treatment of George W. Bush look like, daycare. I mean, kid gloves. I mean, it was, you know, they had a wonderful relationship with George W. Bush compared to what they did to Donald Trump. So all of these years over the past three decades or so, and you could go back further into history if you wish, but all of these years of the pendulum swinging on the ideological scale from one side to the other, from the right to the left, to the right to the left, as balance is sought. The left is now making a power grab to make sure that the pendulum never, ever swings to the right again. Now, how are they doing this? They're doing it through multiple ways. They already hold control of the United States House, although their number there, the margin of their majority has shrunk considerably. But they do control the House and have Nancy Pelosi somehow navigating her way through this. They have a slimmest of majorities, in fact, a 50-50 Senate, with the tiebreaker going to the socialist Kamala Harris. So they have control of the Senate, and of course they have the White House for now with Joe Biden, soon to be with the socialist Kamala Harris. So what are they still lacking? They've got the legislature, they've got the executive, and what they're lacking, of course, is the judicial branch. The Supreme Court, thanks to three appointees during the four Trump years, which was an amazing thing, has what most consider to be a 6-3 conservative majority over the liberals. Now, I would take issue with that. We've discussed this at some depth. Chief Justice John Roberts is far, far from a conservative. He is much more the Kennedy-style swing voter than he is a conservative stalwart. So I don't think it's 6-3. If anything, it's 5-4, and maybe, just depending on the day, I don't know that Kavanaugh is necessarily a super strong conservative either, but nonetheless, they say that it's a 6-3 majority for the justices that were appointed by Republican presidents, let's phrase it that way, over the justices appointed by Democrat presidents. And that simply cannot stand. In a full hostile takeover, to make sure that the pendulum never swings again, they need to make sure that the courts have been reshaped. They need to make sure that that conservative majority, which may stop some of the most radical legislation put forth by the Democrat-controlled Congress, both House and Senate. They have to make sure that that Supreme Court is not going to stand in the way. With a 9-member court and a 6-3 deficit, the only thing they can think of to do is to add 4 more members. Create a 13-person court, let Joe Biden name all 4 of the new members of the Supreme Court, and thus all 4 of them being radical liberal activists in robes, which is what Democrats tend to do when they make appointments, not conservative originalist. Let's take out conservative because that's the ideological buzzword, but how about just constitutional originalists? No, that's what conservatives do. They nominate constitutional originalists. Democrats nominate activists who don't follow the Constitution, but rather modern times. In other words, their own progressive ideals and agendas. So if Joe Biden gets to name 4 of them, it takes the 3 that they already have on the court, plus the 4 gives them a 7-6 majority, and thus the green light to pass any and every piece of radical legislation they could ever come up with at the legislative level and get the green light, calling it constitutional by the new liberal 13-person Supreme Court. This would effectively end the republic. You understand what I'm saying to you? It would end the republic. We already have a very tall mountain to climb to try to retake the majority in the House or the Senate in 2022 because of one of the radical pieces of legislation currently pending, H.R. 1. H.R. 1 is the Voting Reform Act that would again make sure that the pendulum never went back in the other direction. It would allow completely 100% unverifiable mail-in voting. It would allow ballot harvesting. It would allow interrupted counts. It would allow all of the irregularities and all of the problems that we saw in the 2020 presidential election on steroids going forward. H.R. 1 would be an absolute disaster. And it would almost assuredly be ruled unconstitutional by a reasonable Supreme Court. Hence, the need to put a 13-member liberal majority court in place so they could do the most radical things like change the way we vote, open voting to illegal aliens, open voting to felons, open voting to anybody as many times as they wish, because there would be no way to check or balance the number of times people are voting. Voter rolls would never be cleaned up. People who are dead would still be on the rolls. People who have moved from one state to another would be on the rolls in 2 states. You know the drill. And this is what they are looking to have declared constitutional, hence the need for the liberal majority Supreme Court. And that's just part of the grand plan. Another part of the grand plan is to ensure that they have 4 more guaranteed Democrat senators in what would be a 104-member body. Right now there are 100 senators, but when you add 2 more states, Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, that are guaranteed to deliver 2 more senators on the Democrat side of the aisle in each location, now you'll have 104. You'll have a much stronger majority in the Senate as well. In other words, the pendulum would never swing back. That's the goal here. And as it was announced, and this is the most bizarre part of it all, just 2 days ago, Dementia Joe announced a 6-month, 180-day study on the impact of potentially expanding the court, or court packing, if you will. That wasn't good enough for Democrat legislators. We're not going to study this for 6 months. We want to move right now.
Later today, here at the steps of the High Court, a group of Democrats led by Senators Ed Markey and Congressman Jerry Nadler, Hank Johnson, and Mondaire Jones will unveil their plan to add 4 justices to the court, bringing the total to 13 from 9. Now, here's the current makeup of the High Court. You've got the 6 conservatives, Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, Thomas, and, of course, Chief Justice Roberts, and the 3 liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Breyer.
I think that's a little bit inaccurate because not all of those individuals appointed by Republicans are truly conservative. And certainly all three of the Democrats are liberal, but it's not just about liberal ideology. You can be a liberal ideologically and still do your job as a nonpartisan constitutional analyst, which is what these justices are supposed to be. But they're not. They're not just liberal and nonpartisan and evaluating the constitutionality of laws put before them, deciding cases put before them. They're activists. They are legislating from their spots as associate justices on that court. And that's the danger of it. All right. So I wanted to lay it all out there for you in the monologue in as simple terms as I can. I do want to get your reaction. I've got the reaction of constitutional scholars like Jonathan Turley. I've got the reaction of constitutional, or actually not constitutional scholars, a member, a sitting member of the Supreme Court. One of the three activists, one of the three quote unquote liberal members who said, don't even think about this. And I've got the reaction or the pre-action of the President of the United States for you as well. Stay here after this time out. You'll hear exactly what I'm talking about on AM 1420, The Answer. You will stop looking around. Okay, 9:26, we continue on AM 1420, The Answer. By the way, it's kind of funny. I sat here and talked about how I plan to have this wonderful open dialogue with you today on a guest-free Thursday. I've been texting back, and I'm losing my mind. Maybe I should call myself Dementia Joe. I've been texting back and forth with Dr. Everett Piper all morning long. As part of the show prep, we talk about what topics we're going to cover in addition to his book, Grow Up. And Dr. Piper and I do this every Thursday morning, sometimes Wednesday night and then into Thursday morning as we kind of finalize everything. I've been going back and forth. In fact, he texted me 20 minutes ago asking me if it's okay if he's on the cell phone today instead of his landline. Wants to make sure that the signal is clear. And then somehow I'm like, we're guest-free today. That's very seriously alarming. I should probably have myself checked for mental and cognitive decline. I feel very Biden-esque right now. Speaking of Biden, let me go ahead and dive right back into what I was just talking about in the hostile takeover of the United States Supreme Court. And quite frankly, the hostile takeover of the United States, period. The current president of the United States, back in 1983, Senator Joe Biden, had this to say about the idea of court packing by one particular president at one particular moment in time and the long-term impact it would have on the United States Supreme Court and the United States as a whole. Just see if you recall this commentary.
President Roosevelt clearly had the right to send to the United States Senate and the United States Congress a proposal to pack the court. It was totally within his right to do that. He violated no law. He was legalistically absolutely correct. But it was a bonehead idea. It was a terrible, terrible mistake to make. And it put in question, for an entire decade, the independence of the most significant body, including the Congress, in my view, the most significant body in this country, the Supreme Court of the United States of America. The president had the right to do that. He was totally within his power, and his objective was seen clearly.
And it was a bonehead idea, declared Joe Biden. And Joe Biden in 1983 was right. Joe Biden, if he said that in 2021, would also be right. But he's not saying that. You know who is saying that? A current member of the Supreme Court minority. All right? The Democrat appointees, the quote-unquote liberal minority, include Kagan and Sotomayor and Breyer. And literally just last week, Stephen Breyer warned against court packing.
The rule of law has weathered many threats, but it remains sturdy. I hope and expect that the court will retain its authority, but that authority, like the rule of law, depends on trust. A trust that the court is guided by legal principle, not politics. Structural alteration motivated by the perception of political influence can only feed that latter perception.
That is Supreme Court Associate Justice Stephen Breyer warning, and it's a huge warning, against the idea of packing the court in order to try to change the minority to the majority for a short period of time. And the reason why that is so dangerous is because we know what would happen after that. If the pendulum ever did swing in the other direction, if a Republican ever was elected president again, that president is going to almost assuredly call for another round of packing to get the number back to another odd number in which there is a conservative majority. And how long does this go in perpetuity till there's 75 court members? I mean, think about the absurdity of that and the danger of that. And that's something that Jonathan Turley, constitutional law professor at Georgetown, who's a liberal, by the way, Jonathan Turley also knows what this is.
It dispenses with any pretense of principle. It's just a raw muscle play. It's like a hostile takeover of the court. And I don't really understand the political logic here, but what really concerns me is that this is really a test of principle for Democratic members. I'll be watching today to see what senators, what House members step forward and say, this is wrong. This is raw court packing. We can talk about the size of the court. Many of us have talked about expanding the court over the years. This is raw, unadulterated court packing.
Raw and unadulterated indeed. So again, you've got liberals, including Breyer, including Turley, including previously Joe Biden, saying we cannot pack the court, the Supreme Court. It is perhaps the most powerful and important body in the United States because their terms are life terms. They go on for generations. Presidents will come and go every 4 or 8 years. Congressional representatives can turn over every 2 years. But the court is for life, for life. They literally will span generations, and that is something that must be kept sacrosanct. It has to be maintained at its current level. All right, it's 9:31. We'll get news, then we'll come back, and I want to hear from you. 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110 on The Authority.
Progressive Democrats, please be aware, you have now entered the place where political correctness goes to die. This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420, The Answer.
Indeed, now 9:37. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday edition. Coming up in about a half an hour, we will talk to Dr. Everett Piper, which, believe me, is planned. I called it guest free earlier on. I don't know why, but Dr. Piper will be with us. By the way, you got 3 bonus hours of The Authority today by way of the Larry Elder Show tonight. Larry is off tonight. I will be sitting in for the Sage and very much looking forward to doing so. From 6 to 9 live, 7 to 10 here on AM 1420, The Answer. Joining me on the program tonight, I'm really, really looking forward to talking to Christopher Rufo. If you don't know who Christopher Rufo is, Christopher Rufo has penned one of the best and most complete descriptions of the danger of critical race theory that I think has been written to date. He didn't pen it. I shouldn't even say he wrote it. He gave a speech to Hillsdale College on campus last month. And they excerpted the speech. So there's a good portion of the speech that was printed as an article in the latest edition of Imprimis. I'm tempted to read the entire thing to you on the air. I won't, because I don't like to do long-form readings on the radio. It's got to be, first of all, not too terribly long-form, and second of all, it's got to be super compelling. This is super informative. It is super educational. It is super alarming. But I just can't see doing that. I'm going to try to get Christopher Rufo on for the morning show, this show as well. But he will be with me tonight on the Larry Elder Show. But just to give you an idea, just a brief paragraph of what this is all about. This is so worth your read. And if you're on my Facebook page, and I'll try to put it on my Gab and my MeWe pages as well, but it's particularly right now, it's on my Facebook page. It's worth your, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes it's going to take you to read this thing. That's why I don't want to read it on the radio for so long. But critical race theory is being forced into your life. It's being forced into your kids' lives by our Marxist government in training, all right? And the indoctrination specialists that are controlling education of your children. Just make no mistake about that. This is not a question of if you will face critical race theory, but a matter of when you will face critical race theory and what it's going to do to your life and your career. Christopher wrote the following, this very brief portion. There are a series of euphemisms deployed by its supporters to describe critical race theory, including equity, social justice, diversity and inclusion, and culturally responsive teaching. Critical race theorists, masters of language construction, realized that neo-Marxism would be a hard sell. Equity, on the other hand, sounds non-threatening and is easily confused with the American principle of equality. And that's where I'll stop. That's it. I told you it's going to be brief. And I hope it was meaningful. Critical race theory is an attempt to institute Marxist principles into the United States to literally deconstruct the capitalist nuclear family structure and culture and society that we have built for ourselves and to replace it with the principles of a Marxist state. And they use buzzwords. They can't just say neo-Marxism, new Marxism, so they say equity and social justice. Those things sound positive. Equity sounds like equality, and social justice contains the word justice. That's got to be good. Diversity, inclusion, and inclusion, those things have to be good, but they're not good when what they do is they demonize one race of people at all turns, demonize one subset of the American demography, and teach the other side that they are going to be perpetual victims of that one side. Creates division, and it harbors resentment, and it leads to the destruction of the republic. So I hope you understand that. All right, if you want to join us to talk about the core packing move, the power play, the attempt to make sure the pendulum never swings back the other direction again, we'll take your calls at 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110. Meantime, I want to go back to policing in America. Yesterday, Kimberly Potter, who is the woman who was involved in the shooting of Dante Wright in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, she was charged officially with second-degree manslaughter. She was arrested. She was booked. Originally, they had no bail announced for her. They eventually allowed bail. She posted a $100,000 bond and has been released pending her trial. Kimberly Potter is going to go to jail. Make no mistake about this. How do we know? Because Kimberly Potter, a 26-year veteran police officer, who, by the way, was a TO. She was a training officer that day, training a new police officer working under her that day, Sunday, in Brooklyn Center when she had this fatal encounter with Dante Wright. 26-year veteran. As noted, she was a union president as well. She could have retired. Probably at 25, she continued on, wishing right now, I guarantee that she had. She's going to end up in jail for the tragic mistake of grabbing the wrong weapon, grabbing her firearm instead of her taser, and mistakenly shooting Dante Wright. She is going to go to jail. How do we know this? Because it's already been made clear by Minnesota officials, from the governor, Tim Walz, on down to the mayor, Mike Elliott, who fired the city manager for saying she should have due process, who fired the chief of police for saying that this was a tragic accidental discharge. I mean, literally, there is no element of this that they are going to allow to go uncovered in terms of making sure she goes to prison, making sure she's convicted of this manslaughter charge and does time, because the politics of it are too great. The politics of it, the narrative continues. Black males are under siege by white and just generally by police officers in general, but in particular by white officers. So we've got some ground to cover here as it pertains to this. I said this yesterday very briefly. I said it in much more depth on what I'm going to kind of start calling Bob France Road Rants, a video that I posted to Facebook yesterday. These are things that I think about when I'm on long drives, and I just and I'm not on the air right now, and I need to remember them, so I'll just go ahead and record them and post them. Maybe I'll try to put them up on WHKRadio.com as well. In fact, we could probably make that happen sooner rather than later. Well, give me some time on that. But anyway, I made the points very simply, or the point very simply, that Dante Wright is dead in large part because police officers are not allowed to be police officers anymore. I made the point that the police officers in this case, Kimberly Potter and her trainee, needed to be far more aggressive and far more violent with Dante Wright. If they had been far more aggressive and intimidating, and if need be violent to Dante Wright, when they attempted to take him under arrest, he would be alive right now. Now, I know how that sounds to people who just are shallow thinkers and not deep thinkers. What do you mean, be more violent? She shot him and killed him. That's as violence gets, right? And yeah, that's the answer, but that's not the violence I'm talking about. They needed to be more aggressively violent before, or when, rather, they decided to take him out of the car and place him under arrest. They checked his license plates and found that he had a warrant for his arrest, not for some small charge, not jaywalking, all right, not selling Lucy's. He was charged with a violent crime, or at least, yeah, he has been charged. There was a warrant out for his arrest on that violent crime, which was aggravated armed robbery, as he choked a woman and held a gun to her head as his accomplice attempted to steal $820 in rent money from her. All right? He is a violent, violent man, and they knew it. Now, as I said in my video, 10 years ago, police who encountered in a traffic stop somebody that they got word back from the dispatcher had a warrant out for a violent felony gun crime would have surrounded that car, weapons drawn, ordered him out of the car, hands in the air, on your knees, on the ground, on your face, right now. They would have jumped on him, put a knee in his back, maybe even on his neck, dare I say, that actually is a police tactic to bring a suspect under control. Now, keeping the knee on the neck after being handcuffed for 9 minutes is another story. It's why Derek Chauvin is going to go to prison. Okay? But 10 years ago, Dante Wright would have been treated with aggression and violence if you call forcing somebody to the ground, putting a knee on them until they are cuffed and under control violent. That is what would have happened. And this morning, he would be in jail or trying to post bond and facing a trial for his attempted aggravated armed robbery. That's the way it would have worked. They would have surrounded him, drawn their weapons, and as I said, put him on the ground and held him there forcefully, aggressively and violently, until he was under control in handcuffs and could be lifted and then placed in a squad car. He'd be alive today if cops were allowed to be cops. And that's what that would be. But instead, Kimberly Potter, the officer in charge on this day and at this moment, Kimberly Potter sees that this is a violent gun criminal, meaning there is a warrant out for a violent gun crime that he is suspected of. And instead of treating him in the manner I just described, it was, okay, sir, we would like to request now, politely. We would like to politely request now that you exit your vehicle, and would you please stand there for us and be calm, and would you please place your right hand behind your back and allow me to put this iron bracelet on it for you, and then would you kindly bring your left hand back to join that one, because we need to take you under arrest, and we need to place you in that car over there ever so gently and take you to jail. And I know you aren't going to mind this. You're going to be nice and calm and peaceful about it, because the fact that you're facing 20 years in prison really doesn't deter you at all, right? Now, obviously, I'm just telling a fanciful story here, because that's what she did. Not in those words, but they were afraid to be aggressive and violent with a violent gun suspect. You understand what I'm saying? It was a terrible, terrible arrest, because they're afraid, with body cameras rolling, to be aggressive. Because somebody's going to say, oh my God, he wasn't even resisting and you had to put him on the ground like that and kneel on his back. Well, this is George Floyd 2.0. They're scared to death to be aggressive with violent criminals. And because she was scared to be on video, on body cam, being aggressive with a suspect that needed aggression, the aggressive suspect shoved her out of the way and jumped in the car and drove off, leading to her tragic mistake. I cannot say this enough, and I'll say it to a national audience tonight on the Larry Elder Show. The reason Dante Wright is dead is because cops aren't allowed to be cops. Cops needed to be much more aggressive and violent with him. In direct contrast with the statement made yesterday, or on rather Tuesday or Monday, by Sharia Tlaib, Democratic Congresswoman from Michigan, who said that this was not an accident, that police are inherently and intentionally racist, and that they met, not George Floyd, that they met Dante Wright with aggression and violence. No, they didn't. They should have met him with aggression and violence, and they didn't, because they're afraid of people like you ruining their lives and their careers. And because they were less than aggressive and violent, they allowed this man the room to push his way out of it, jump in a car, and then get shot as he tried to flee in an accidental discharge. So that's the bottom line here. It doesn't matter what a cop does. A cop is in a lose-lose situation in 2021 America. I don't know why anybody would even consider taking the test to get into the academy in 2021, ever. And I don't say that lightly, because we need more cops. But I cannot imagine the mindset of anybody who does. Why would you want to be a part of this? You're going to lose-lose. If you're too aggressive, they're going to arrest you for excessive force. If you're not aggressive enough, you could get shot. I mean, it's just a lose-lose situation. And guess what? It's not just in Minnesota. And it's not just in Texas, and it's not just in New Mexico, where we've seen these cops being shot in traffic stops. Now we've got another Columbus, Ohio incident. Now we've got the shooting of Miles Jackson, 27 years old, by Columbus police. And now, yes, protesters are barging into the city hall and barging into the police precinct in Columbus, all because Miles Jackson got shot. What were the circumstances there? It doesn't matter. All you need to know is that he's black. Because that's the headline of every single story here. Black man shot by police in Columbus. If you want the details, I've got them for you. And I'll share them with you next on AM 1420, The Answer. So just briefly, 9:57 now, it's in Columbus too. Officers conducting a routine pat-down of a man in a hospital emergency room found a gun in his waistband, which spurred a struggle over the weapon and a standoff that ended in officers killing him, according to police body cam footage released yesterday. Officers have been searching Miles Jackson. And, of course, you know the Associated Press report here was going to include this. A black man, capital B, thanks to AP Style, a black man, has to be a racial incident. A black man at the hospital Monday in preparation for a custody exchange over warrants he had out for his arrest. Jackson began to struggle with the two officers after one of them felt the gun. One of the officers used a stun gun on Jackson, and they fell to the floor, while the other attempted to pull Jackson's hands away from his waistband and the gun. A shot can then be heard in the video, apparently from the gun in Jackson's waistband. The officer who stunned him took cover outside the room. The other officer returned fire at Jackson once before taking cover behind a hospital bed. Officers shouted for 4 minutes at Jackson to raise his hands and put them over his head. An officer eventually used the stun gun for a second time on Jackson. Another shot can then be heard in the video before the officers opened fire. Jackson died in the shooting at Mount Carmel St. Anne's Hospital in suburban Columbus. The races of all the officers have not been confirmed, the AP wants you to know. As if it freaking matters! Although several appeared to be white. Oh! By the way, lowercase white, capital B, lowercase W. Just make sure you know that. We have the audio from a portion of the body cam video from this incident in Columbus yesterday. I want to share this with you. And for some reason, it's not playing. This doesn't always work the way it's supposed to. My apologies. Let's try it one more time here.
Miles Jackson being asked to get off the gurney so officers can collect his things.
I'm going to grab all this stuff, put it in this bag, okay?
An officer pulls out a pack of cigarettes, some credit cards, and a bullet.
Uh-oh. Got a little bullet action.
He continues patting Jackson down, then feels something and motions to his partner.
Get his arm behind his back right now.
The officers struggle to get Jackson handcuffed.
You on my arm! Give me your hand now!
An officer tases Jackson, bringing him to the floor. As the struggle continues, we hear a gunshot believed to be from Jackson. Then one from an officer, but his gun jams.
Get your right hand up! We're trying!
Officers yell at Jackson to get his hands up and drop his weapon 85 times.
I want to say that last part again. Officers yelled at Jackson to get his hands up 85 times. And he wouldn't do so until he eventually got his hand on his gun and fired again, leading to his death. Headline from the Associated Press, black man shot by police officers, majority white. It's 10 o'clock. We'll have news now. Dr. Everett Piper will join us next on AM 1420.